Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 20th, 2024. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Holiday Season, Women of Steel, Show Soft Hearts. Women's Union Group, other Mueller employees donate to Oasis Daycare Center, or Day Center, sorry. Paulette Jones passes by the Oasis Day Center on Cerro Gordo Street in Decatur every day during her early morning commute to work at Mueller Company, just blocks away. "I see people out there at 3 o'clock in the morning," she said about the homeless center. "It just breaks my heart." One day, Jones brought some food to the center and learned more about the agency, a Heritage Behavioral Health Center facility. "I came right back to my union brothers and told them, 'Next year we're doing the Oasis,'" Jones said. Jones is the chairperson for Women of Steel, an activism-focused group for female members of the United Steelworkers. During previous holiday seasons, the group and members of the United Steelworkers Local 7838 have collected items specific to an agency in need. They have also donated to a diaper drive for Baby Talk for 3 years. "It's becoming an annual thing," Jones said. "We'll be doing the diaper drive again in the spring." The Women of Steel recently collected various items generally used by clients and staff at the Oasis Day Center. Personal hygiene products include deodorant, lotions, soaps, toothbrushes, and toothpaste, women's hygiene products, hand warmers, and water. The daycare center also received a few donations, such as detergent, coffee, tea, and hot chocolate. The Oasis administration said that they were appreciative of this, as well as other donations they have received during the holidays. "It's just lovely that people are focusing on giving this time of year, but also throughout the year," said Mary Garrison, president of Heritage Behavioral Health Center. Donors are able to see the Oasis wish list on the agency's website. "That's a way for them to really know, and that's important for folks to understand that they are giving what is needed," Garrison said. "They don't have to make that decision on their own. As they choose to give, we want to honor that." The Oasis isn't the first nonprofit to benefit from the generosity of the Women of Steel. "We pick a project that we want to help out in our community and give back," Jones said. The group encourages other union and company employees to contribute to the donations. "We don't badger people," Jones said. "We just ask them nicely." After 2 weeks of collecting items and monetary donations, organizers gather the items to take to the Oasis. "In 2 weeks, we probably raised $700 in cash and probably another $400 or so in products," Jones said. Union steward Tyler Bundy encouraged donations during the second shift. "We passed around a bucket on each shift so that they could make a donation," he said. Although the donations were organized by the Women of Steel Union Group, their male co-workers often help with the volunteer opportunities. "It feels good to help out in the community," Bundy said, "and it was cool to do something different." Jones doesn't work alongside the second shift crews, so she relies on others to help with the collections. "We just want to show that we are hard-working union members," said Joe Peoples, union committee member. "We are brothers and sisters and want to be involved in the community and help people out." The union members said that they look beyond their workforce when helping others. "Our workplaces are so diverse. We need to know the needs and wants of everybody," Peoples said. "It's not a single thing. We're together," he said. And the photos here on page A4 show Paulette Jones donating feminine hygiene products and other items to the Oasis Day Center with the United Steelworkers Local 7838 in Decatur on Wednesday. And the photo on the right shows the personal hygiene products, coffee, laundry detergent, and other items that are donated by the United Steelworkers Local 7838 to the Oasis Daycare Center. And I see bottles of water and other bags. I don't know what are in the bags, and people standing behind the tables where these items are collected. And the photo on the front page, getting back to it here, shows Steve Stewart hugging Paulette Jones from the United Steelworkers Local 7838 while the union donates items to the Oasis Day Center in Decatur on Wednesday. And we see Paulette Jones from the back being hugged by Steve Stewart. And I don't know if Steve Stewart is with the Oasis or what. And then there's an insert here that says Oasis Day Center donations. Donations for the Oasis Day Center can be dropped off from 3 to 4:30 p.m. on the first Tuesday of the month at the center at 243 West Sarah Gorder Street in Decatur. For larger or special donations, donors should contact the Heritage Behavioral Health Center at 217-362-6262. Again, that's 362-6262. And then there's an insert picture here showing Tyler Bundy, Joe Peoples, Crystal Emmons, and Paulette Jones from the United Steelworkers Local 7838 carrying donations into the Oasis Day Center. And we see the trunk open in one person's car, and I think this Tyler Bundy is pulling out red cloth bags, it looks like, to take into the center, and other people are carrying things coming out of the trunk and going into the Oasis Day Center. Also on the front page, Illinois education. Budget pressures could hit K-12 funds. Education Board told revenue growth to be flat amid demands. This is from Springfield. Public schools in Illinois have enjoyed several consecutive years of substantial increases in state funding, thanks largely to steady growth in state revenues and a new funding formula that lawmakers approved in 2018. But whether that can continue into the upcoming fiscal year is an open question that state lawmakers will have to face when they return to the State House in January. With budget forecasters predicting flat revenue growth over the next year and continued demands for increased spending in other areas of the budget, such as pension costs and health care, members of the Illinois State Board of Education were told Wednesday that they are now in a different fiscal environment. "I do not envy anybody involved in that process because it won't be fun. A fun time," Eric Noggle, revenue manager of the legislature's Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, or COGFA, told the board. COGFA is a nonpartisan agency that provides economic and budgetary analysis to the General Assembly. It operates independently of the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, or GOMB, although the two agencies are often in agreement in their general findings and analysis. In November, GOMB issued a report projecting a $3.2 billion deficit in the fiscal year that begins July 1, 2025. That was based on projections of essentially flat revenue growth of about $53.4 billion and a 6% increase in spending due to statutorily required increases in things like pension contributions, Medicaid and state employee health care costs, and pre-K through 12 education. In the current fiscal year, state spending on public schools totals just under $11 billion, or about 20% of the state's $53 billion general revenue fund budget. Two factors are primarily responsible for the demand for increased state spending on schools. One is the 2018 funding formula, known as the evidence-based funding model, that calls for annual increases of at least $350 million. That law sets out a formula for determining what would be an adequate level of funding for each district, based on factors such as total student enrollment, poverty rates, and the number of English language learners in the district. The adequacy target includes both state aid and money in the district, and money the district is able to raise on its own through local property taxes. The law then directs that the new money each year be sent to districts that are furthest away from their adequacy target. The annual funding increases are supposed to continue until all districts reach at least 90% of their adequacy target. But some advocates argue the state needs to increase its evidence-based funding by more than the minimum $350 million each year. One thing that we know is that 3 out of 4 children in Illinois are still underfunded districts. That's more than 1 million students, Jelani Sadik, Director of Government Relations for the advocacy group Advance Illinois, told the board during the public comment portion of its meeting Wednesday. The latest school report card shows continued challenges with chronic absenteeism and lagging recovery in math. We need to set our schools up for success in addressing these challenges in the absence of federal stimulus funds by doubling down on our EBF investment moving forward, she said. The other factor driving increases in public school spending is known as mandatory categorical spending, or MCAT, which includes such things as transportation costs, the state's free breakfast and lunch program, and the cost of educating children in foster care. Andy Krupen, ISBE's Director of Funding and Disbursements, explained that the state often does not fully fund MCAT expenses and thus prorates the amount it reimburses districts for those expenses. The level of proration varies depending on how much the General Assembly appropriates in each category. Based on the agency's estimate of next year's costs, Krupen said, the General Assembly would need to add another $142.2 million to its pre-K through 12 budget just to maintain the same level of proration as this year. Combined with a $350 million increase called for under the EBF formula, that would be a total increase in pre-K through 12 spending of $492.2 million next year. But ISBE has received requests for even more funding increases than that. During a series of public hearings on the budget in October, officials said the agency heard numerous proposals adding up to about $2.2 billion in funding increase requests. Those included proposals for a $550 million increase in EBF funding and a $10 million increase in career and technical education funding, among other requests. And GOMB's projection of a $3.2 billion deficit assumed a $444 million increase in school spending, as well as a $1.1 billion increase in health care expenses and a $437 million increase in pension contributions, among other increases. State Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders is scheduled to submit his final budget proposal to the board for approval at the board's January 15th meeting. Pritzker is scheduled to deliver his budget address to the General Assembly February 19th. And the photo here on page A4 shows Illinois State Board of Education members James Anderson. He's in the foreground. He's listening to a presentation about budget challenges for pre-K through 12 education, along with board members Laura Gonzalez and Patricia Nugent. And the three are, cover the picture, from left to right. Also on the front page, gift giving. Santa visits bomb school to spread cheer. As the Grinch would no doubt say, the kindergarten classroom at bomb school on Wednesday was an example of all the noise. That's because Santa Claus popped in and handed out presents to all the students in Tammy Carver's room, and while the little ones weren't who's in the Whoville, they certainly seemed like to like Christmas a lot. "This is the best day of my life," proclaimed Noah Tobar, his face wreathed in smiles as he went back to his seat on the rug after getting his present from Santa and smiling for the photo taken by Carver of each child with the jolly old elf. Santa told all the kids to say "ho, ho, ho" instead of "cheese." "We're not from Wisconsin," Santa quipped. "We're from the North Pole." He also asked each child if he or she had been good, and while most said they had, one or two had to think about it first. Carver has been doing the Christmas Presents Project for 15 years. She started it early in her teaching career when she discovered that one of the children in her class hadn't received a single present for Christmas. The child put on a brave face, but it broke her heart. Talking about that even now brings tears to her eyes. She posts on Facebook right around Thanksgiving asking her friends to pitch in and adopt a child in her classroom. This year she had 25 kids, and all of them had been adopted within a few days. She assigns each a child, gives the friend the child's wish list, obtained through their letters to Santa Claus, and the friend shops for the child, wraps the present, and hands off to Carver, who arranged for Santa to come in and hand them out. The presents, as far as the kids know, come from Santa, and the kids mostly managed to restrain their curiosity until everyone had their presents, when Carver let them open them. The chaos was epic. We're just going to play today," Carver said, laughing as she herded her kids back to their seats and implored them to wait until they got home to open toys. With tiny parts that could get lost, like Legos or messy things like slime, which was quite popular. Several children had containers of that, along with robotic toys that light up and make noise, and dinosaurs continue to be a much-wanted item among both boys and girls. Brelacia Cunningham had asked Santa for a robotic dog, which she got, and she clutched him close while his eyes flashed and he made robotic dog noises. "He's the best, Santa," she said. Slime was at the top of Luna Allen's list, and she got some of that, too. "That's my favorite thing, is slime," she said. "It's so fun. I've always wanted it." Carver said she's grateful her friends always step up to make the Christmas present giveaway happen, and many of them have done it year after year, even asking her when she's going to be ready to assign kids to them weeks beforehand. "I just want every child to have a good Christmas," Carver said. "I thought, I've got friends who go crazy for their kids at the holidays and give them everything, and then there's the other side of the tracks where some kids get nothing. That's why I started doing it." And all the photos here on page A4 are full of kids and presents and Christmas things. The largest one here shows Michael Lawson opening his gifts after a visit from Santa Claus to the kindergarten classroom at Baum Elementary in Decatur on Wednesday. And he's got a big smile on his face and a torn gift wrap, and then the box is open. I don't know what he's going to haul out of there, but he looks pretty happy. And then in the background is full of kids looking in their boxes. Lots of gift wrap, lots of gift bags, and kids looking into their presents. And in the way background is a teacher taking a picture. And a small inset on the left says, Santa says, "Say ho, ho, ho," Santa Claus tells kindergartner Brant Lofton while they pose for a picture at Baum Elementary School in Decatur on Wednesday. And on the right picture, kindergartners Luna Allen, Demi Woodland, and Brelacia Cunningham open their Christmas gifts after a visit from Santa Claus at Baum's Elementary School in Decatur on Wednesday. And it looks like a little chaos, but also great joy with tearing open the wrapping and finding what you ask Santa for Christmas. The kids have smiles and also looks of awe on their face. On page A3, in more local and state news, Durbin slams shocking polio vaccine rhetoric from RFK Jr. This is from Springfield. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin on Wednesday slammed Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is President-elect Donald Trump's nominee to lead the Department of Health and Human Services, for questioning the safety and efficacy of the polio vaccine. Illinois' senior senator began by saying he remembered growing up in a world before the polio vaccine existed and that the virus scared the hell out of us. That's in quotes. Nobody knew what was happening, how a kid could wake up in the morning and go to school, look as healthy as could be, and die before dinner, said Durbin, 80. That's what polio was all about. Iron lungs, scary results, crippling kids, and we didn't know where it came from. And then came the amazing news that someone had developed a vaccine to deal with polio, he said. We couldn't believe it. No kid wanted to take a shot. But to be protected from polio, you did it, and you were happy to do it. Durbin's remarks made from the floor of the U.S. Senate comes days after the New York Times reported that a top advisor to Kennedy in 2022 petitioned the Food and Drug Administration to revoke its approval of the polio vaccine. Besides being the namesake of one of the country's most beloved political figures, Kennedy is best known for his anti-vaccine positions, often repeating debunked claims that vaccines cause autism. A spokesperson for Kennedy said in response to media inquiries that the health secretary nominee believes the polio vaccine should be available to the public and thoroughly and properly studied. The Centers for Disease Control says the polio vaccine is safe and effective. The number of polio cases and deaths dropped dramatically following the vaccine's creation in 1954. And there have been essentially no polio cases in the United States in years. For RFK Jr. to say that we have to study the polio vaccine at this point is not only sad, it's shocking, Durbin said. It's shocking that a person seeking the highest level cabinet position under the Trump administration is willing to be so fast and loose with the scientific truth. I tell you this, he continued, if he's going to discourage vaccines across America, he is in for a fight, because that's what's going to happen, sadly, is that a lot of innocent children and innocent people are going to be hurt as a result of it, he said. Referencing a piece by Chicago Sun-Times columnist Neil Steinberg, the senator noted that the vaccine was studied and proven effective when it was in its first trial run 70 years ago. 1,300,000 plus cases administering it, testing it, before we moved forward with it 70 years ago, he said. Nothing in the meantime to suggest otherwise. It is safe and efficient and effective. Durbin stopped short of saying he would oppose Kennedy's nomination, but pledged to meet with the nominee and challenge his positions on vaccine directly. Meanwhile, Trump himself told reporters earlier this week that he is a big believer in the polio vaccine and he would preserve access to it. You're not going to lose the polio vaccine, he said. That's just not going to happen. Man gives 200th blood donation in Coles County, Mattoon. David Meyer started giving blood in 1957 while attending high school in Vero Beach, Florida, and has never stopped. The Mattoon resident's dedication to this pursuit led to him making his 200th donation Wednesday afternoon at the Impact Life Blood and Plasma Donation at the Cross County Mall. Meyer's a retired cable television technician said his dedication over the decades has been motivated by the knowledge that every donated unit of blood can save up to 3 lives. I've been lucky enough to be able to save lives. My health has stayed good, Meyer said. Donors can give blood every 2 months, so Meyer said he makes sure to donate about 6 times every year. Meyer said he has been regularly giving with Impact Life in Coles County since 2005, when it was known as Community Blood Services, and had a Loxa Road location. Meyer said he also followed Impact Life's team to various mobile blood drives, particularly while the Cook's Mills Fire Protection District's annual pork chop supper. Anytime someone is having a drive, I try to support it, Meyer said. He noted that he was at this supper a decade ago when he completed the donation of his 20th gallon of blood, with 8 donation units of blood equaling a gallon. Now Meyer has set a goal of completing his 25th gallon of blood in 2025 and saving a total of 600 lives. The Mattoon resident was cheered on by the Impact Life staff and fellow donors on Wednesday as he made his 200th donation at the Mall's Donation Center, which is open from noon to 5:30 Mondays and Wednesdays and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturdays. Chad Sabin, a community development advocate for Impact Life, said, having a donor give 200 units of blood is a very rare achievement. When it happens, it's something very special and something worth celebrating, Sabin said, amid congratulating Myers. We're just really proud of David and really proud of his accomplishments. Sabin noted that Myers' milestone also coincides with one for a Davenport, Iowa-based Impact Life, as this nonprofit organization celebrates its 50th anniversary this year. Impact Life provides blood for approximately 120 community hospitals in Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, and Wisconsin. Meyer said he appreciates that they provide blood locally for Sarah Bush Lincoln in Coles County. Sabin said many of Impact Life's mobile blood drives take place at colleges such as Eastern Illinois University. He said the number of donations decreases while schools are on winter break, but that the demand for blood continues steadily. Consequently, he said donations of blood are particularly needed during the holiday season. It's more important than ever that donors donate during this peak time, Sabin said. Community members can find blood drives near them or schedule donations via bloodcenter.org/. Again, that's one word, bloodcenter.org. And the photo here shows David Myers of Mattoon giving his 200th donation of blood on Wednesday afternoon with the help of Impact Life charge Adoncia Tyler at the Blood and Plasma Donation Center at the Cross County Mall in Mattoon. And he's in one of those lounge chairs that they have at the blood centers, and he's squeezing the ball and has got his tube in his arm, and we don't see the blood, but it's going into a packet. And he's got his red shirt on, and Ms. Tyler is assisting him. Today's highlight in history: on December 20th, 1803, the Louisiana Purchase was completed as ownership of the territory was formally transferred from France to the United States. And on this date in 1946, the classic holiday film It's a Wonderful Life premiered at the Globe Theater in New York City. In 1986, 3 black men were attacked by a group of white youths in the Howard Beach neighborhood of Queens, New York, resulting in the death of Michael Griffith. In 1987, more than 4,300 people were killed in the Doña Paz, a Philippine passenger ship collided with the tanker Vector off Mindoro Island. And in 1989, the United States launched Operation Just Cause, sending troops into Panama to topple the government of General Manuel Noriega. And in 2019, the United States Space Force was established when President Donald Trump signed the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2020. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 20th, 2024. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.